You are listening to Fanthatrax.
Because of the following special program, Wonder Woman and the Incredible Hulk will not be presented this evening.
Time to get all your Star Wars news in a single file. This is Making Tracks. Here are your hosts, Mark Newbold and Mark Mulcaster.
That's not true.
Hello and welcome to episode 118 of Making Tracks, brought to you by the fine folk over at fanthatracks.com. My name's Mark, I am one of your co-hosts, and this week, as always, I'm joined by a man who lives, breathes, reads, writes, and even poops Star Wars. And actually, one thing that I learned about him recently that I never knew is that he is like a long, long distance relation to Hannah from Hanna-Barbera. I'm very proud to say that I'm joined by Mr. Fred Flintstone. Fred, how are you doing, buddy?
Yabba-dabba-doo! I'm very well, thank you. I'm very well. Yes, I am actually related to William Hanna, as listeners to Star Wars Spins will have found out, yes. And I do poop Star Wars.
Nice. How are you doing?
After that devastating introduction, I'm fine, thank you. Thank you very well. It's been a good week and loads going on. I say this every week, I'm like a stuck record, but it's true. There's loads going on. There's been loads going on the site. It's been a busy week on the site. Of course, we're rolling up to Book of Boba Fett. We're into December. Yep. Good grief, we're into December. Farthest from's not that far away. So pretty cool and all good. How about yourself?
I am now on the rapid descent down the hill towards Christmas and the Christmas break, which means I am trying to cram in as many shows and stuff to finish before Christmas. So, of course, the obligatory Christmas specials and all that are getting finished this week and all that. So I'm kind of semi in the Christmas cheer. I mean, I used to work in theatre. I used to do live sound before I started working in TV. And so I'd spend most of November and definitely December working on pantos. And I tell you what, if there's one thing, you know, you can do to kill the Christmas spirit, that is to basically work on panto. And second to that is probably to work on a load of TV Christmas specials. But hey ho, that's just life. Most importantly, it pays for Star Wars and Star Wars collections. So that is all good. How's things with you in terms of, like, have you had much get delivered to the doorstep this week?
I've had a couple of bits come through, not a huge amount. I had two of the new Star Wars calendars come through. Ooh, for 2022. Cool. So I had the it was the Mandalorian desk calendar, not the one where you pull the sheets off, the 365 ones, which I like, but they're a bit messy. It's the stand-up one. It's got a little cardboard fold at the bottom, so it sort of stands up and flips over. So I've got a Mando one of those, really nice.
Is that the Grogu one?
I've got the bigger Grogu one. And they did a small one in the similar style. No, this one is Mando, and the cover is Mando and the child on the speeder bike on the cover of this one.
Gotcha.
So it's really, really nice. And then the other one was the 2022 Star Wars one, which is obviously classic OT sort of images on the back. But beyond that, a couple of comics turned up. Not a huge amount. It's been a reasonably quiet week. Some weeks it's like every day, and I get the side eye look from Ruth, like, where the hell's that going to go?
I know that.
We'll see the fine room for it. Yeah. Who needs to store food in the cupboards when he can store Star Wars there instead?
Exactly.
Not too much this week. How about yourself?
So I only had a couple of things. I had the Life Day Treasury by George Mann and Kevin Scott that turned up from Amazon. And I had the Armourer in the 6-inch credit chip Black Series figure line.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah. I don't know why she's only turned up, not the others. I would have thought I would have ordered the others, but I'm getting confused actually at the moment, because there seems to be a lot of stuff that we pre-ordered for like next year, which seems to be creeping up in people's social media feeds and hitting stores in the US and various different places. So I'm kind of like, is that meant to come out now or is it meant to come out later? And when have I ordered it and when's it coming? And I don't know. It's all a bit mad. I suppose, more importantly for us, the 29th of December, the Book of Boba Fett. And I believe there's been some news that's come out this week, hasn't there?
There's been loads of news. So let's do a Boba Chunk and talk about all the Boba Fett stuff that's come out this week. So
Boba Chunk.
First news, about, Boba Chunk.
Wasn't that the character who was in that episode of The Mandalorian?
Yeah, well, you know, there were a few memes about that, weren't there?
Yes.
But the meme that we're going to talk about right now, we've got confirmation that The Book of Boba Fett Season 1 will run for 7 episodes. So they put out the new teaser, one of the new teasers, there's a couple that came out over the last week, but the news that we want to talk about right now, 7 episodes of The Book of Boba Fett. Does that feel like enough when you get 8 episodes of The Mandalorian, which always feels sufficient? So 7 episodes of Book of Boba Fett, about right, isn't it?
I would say so. Who's to know? The trailers and the teasers of TV spots that have been coming out and dropping this week, they all seem to be either shown the same footage or slightly extended shots from different scenes and stuff like that. There's a few shots which kind of make you go, okay, so are we going to be jumping around the timeline a little bit in terms of potentially could we be actually jumping back to obviously when he first comes out of a Sarlacc pit, and then we're going to be jumping to later on when he first regains, you know, the Slave One, and does that mean that we're going to see potentially Din Djarin and Grogu as a cameo, because obviously he goes off to do that. And, you know, I suppose it all depends upon how it's paced, but if the trailer has anything to go by, I think 7 episodes is right. They've clearly put on the tweet it's a 7-episode original series, but it doesn't say season one, so it could almost be a one and done, couldn't it? It could be 7 episodes and this is a story of Boba Fett, or at least maybe the intention is now. I mean, obviously, if it does gangbusters and suddenly, you know, it's the highest streamed show for like the last couple of months, they might reconsider and suddenly a season two gets greenlit. But I think 7 episodes is probably about right. I suppose it might then lead directly into the front end of maybe Andor, if that's going to come early next year. Who knows? But 7 episodes, that's going to take us up to what? End of February, isn't it, really? Beginning of March.
Yeah.
So I think that's great. So it's going to keep us warm through the winter months, which is quite exciting.
Yeah, 7 to me feels about right. There's clearly a lot of story ground they want to cover. And also, it's a little bit like when WandaVision came out and that had, 9 episodes. And then Falcon and Winter Soldier comes out and there are 6 episodes. But the WandaVision episodes were half an hour and Falcon and Winter Soldier were 45 minutes. So it also depends on the episode length, which these days in the streaming world, as you know.
Who knows? Yeah, it's up to...
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, you can have one episode that's 20 minutes and the next episode that's an hour. So it doesn't really matter. And I guess it's where the directors and the writers want to break up the story and chop it into the, you know, whichever bits they want to do. And also, exactly like you said, they could have looked at this and gone, well, we kind of want Fett finished, a couple of weeks break, and then get Andor started, or whatever it might be, you know, or Kenobi or whatever they're doing next. I don't think they've really nailed that down. So I suppose there's other considerations as well to sort of factor in. But I think 7 episodes, yeah, I think you're right. I think it feels like that's the right length. And I hope that there's more to be done, because it feels like Temuera is now proper. He's voiced Boba Fett in the past, and we saw him in those Mandalorian scenes. But really, as it stands right now, ahead of the 29th of December, you would look at Temuera Morrison's most significant contribution to Star Wars is obviously Jango Fett in Attack of the Clones.
Mm.
And now that's going to flip now. You've got the guy who's now in his 60s. He's come right back to the fore of Star Wars, back to where he was 20 years ago, which is kind of fitting that Clones was 20 years ago. And now that character, or that actor, that face, let's say, because it's the same face, literally and in the universe, essentially, is right back at the forefront of Star Wars. So I really hope, I'm confident this show will do fantastic.
I'm really interested, actually, just to kind of get your take on what we've seen from the Book of Boba Fett teasers and stuff like that. Because one person came up to me, actually, at work, and I thought this was quite interesting. So she kind of actually got into Star Wars. I would probably say Rise of Skywalker. And her take was, the Book of Boba Fett, just it kind of looks a bit like The Mandalorian.
I think we talk about this a lot, and I think it's right to talk about it, because we're so granular, and we would look at that and think, well, that's Fett. To us as long-term fans, there's all the stuff around Fett, the legend of him, all the comics we read back in the day, the books and the toys and everything else. So you're filtering a lot of stuff. If you're a new fan just coming in, like this lady, you know, sort of got into it the last couple of years, that's really when Mandalorian went over huge.
Yeah.
And you could argue that as a success in terms of public perception, I don't think there's much of an argument, the Mandalorian was more successful than Rise of Skywalker. People got into the Mandalorian, the whole Grogu thing, or still Baby Yoda then, but, you know, that whole aspect of Star Wars went over gangbusters publicly, whereas The Rise of Skywalker, internally within the fandom and then externally connecting to the audiences, it did $1 billion, 1.1, great money, but not maybe what they would have expected. So it didn't quite connect in the way that they anticipated. So if you come into Star Wars in 2019, you're probably going to be thinking more of The Mandalorian than anything else. And you would look at Fett and think, well, he's in a very similar armour. If you've watched Mando, you've kind of seen him come in. If you don't know who Boba Fett is, he's just a guest star. It's like we said last week about Ahsoka.
Yeah.
If you don't know much about Ahsoka's past, she's just a guest star in The Mandalorian. If you know a lot like we do, you'd be like, oh my God, it's Ahsoka.
Hi, this is Julie Dolan, the voice of Princess Leia, and you're listening to Fanthatrax. It's your only hope.
So Ming-Na Wen, she's been talking about, obviously, the character and her role in the Book of Boba Fett, and she discusses the working relationship, basically, between Fennec and Boba Fett. She doesn't give too much away, But I will read a quote and then I will ask for your thoughts and ideas on this. Okay. Ming-Na says, well, there's a partnership between the two of them, that's Fennec and Boba Fett, for sure. They're bonded by the fact that they both live through a near-death experience and there is a sense of code that they both abide by. So it's going to be really interesting to see how their dynamics grow in the Book of Boba Fett. I think that's all I can say. The rest is, you have to watch. Not that they're the bad guys, but they're not that good either. So basically she's saying, is the great observation, and it's fairly obvious, but you've got to say it out loud sometimes, they've both been through near-death experiences. Mm. She was blasted in the stomach by Toro Calican in Chapter 5 of Season 1 of Mando, and Fett fixed her, gave her that sort of cybernetic stomach or whatever it is, and he was eaten by the Sarlacc, which hopefully we're going to get to see in Season 1. So what do you think of that? That's a great observation. You would think that would bond them, but then we've just read War of the Bounty Hunters. We read Bounty Hunters the comic every month. Yep. They're ripping the crap out of each other 24/7. So maybe it's not such a unique situation in the scope of the Book of Boba Fett. It's a good point, isn't it?
I think it is, yeah. I mean, this code, there's definitely a code that they kind of coexist in. Trauma does create these kind of like unique bonds between people, and you kind of see that in the armed services and frontline and stuff like that. And there's probably a kinship there that actually is probably something they probably can't describe beyond that it's like mutual respect. They've both got the guts and the balls, as it were, to kind of like drag themselves out of a Sarlacc pit or what have you, and actually that tenacity to just fight to stay alive. And so now they're probably in that position, and this is just kind of speculation, but now in the position where they can just realise that maybe actually just kind of always going after a quarry and after the hunt isn't the smartest thing to necessarily do if you want to keep longevity into like yourself and stuff like that. So I think they're thinking actually a slight change of career. I think it's slightly they're taking their freelance ways and they're kind of going corporate a little bit with Boba kind of taking over Jabba's kind of syndicate, or at least that's what, you know, I assume is going to happen in the show anyway. So what's your take?
Yeah, similar. I think there's probably, because we know there's a connection between Omega and Fennec going back to Bad Batch, we've heard mention of Alpha, who is Boba Fett, in the Bad Batch. So you can assume quite fairly that you will see Boba in his earlier years in Season 2 or 3 or whatever of Book of Boba Fett, and that connection and that relationship will be explored to some degree in that show. It feel like a missed opportunity if they didn't. So I think, and also, I think you've got to think back to that Chapter 5, Season 1, the Gunslinger episode, where at the end, Fennec's lying, we think, dead in the sand, and you hear the spurs of Boba come along and find her in the desert. Without thinking too deeply about it, initially you just go, oh, he just found her in the desert. But I think now you realise that he knew she was in the desert. There's a connection between the two characters. He was probably very well aware that she was there and what she was doing. There's a relationship between those two that goes deeper than what we've seen in the Book of Boba Fett, or what we can assume and surmise from it so far, and maybe even from what we see in Season 1, is an even longer, deeper relationship that will be explored in further comics, books, TV shows, animation, whatever. So I think that there's a connection between those two that's unlike a connection between any other two Bounty Hunters, because I think having read, and it's all connected, of course, having read War with the Bounty Hunters, I just wrote a review of the RG-88 one-shot, which is great fun. And in there, I sort of say, you look at this War with the Bounty Hunters, which is such a pivotal moment in Star Wars history, you know, that Empire to Jedi period, Solo as the coffee table, all that sort of stuff. You realise all these Bounty Hunters that were stood on the bridge of the Executor, that's probably the most passive and immobile they've ever been in each other's company. Because when you're reading the comics, Boss gets tied to a rock and left to freeze. Dengar gets sent off on an ice floe in one episode.
Exactly,
Forlom has his head ripped off. Boba gets attacked at every turn, and we don't see Valance on screen. We haven't yet. I hope we do. But, you know, he's currently just been found and rebuilt by Darth Vader, for goodness sake. So there's all these crazy things happening to them. So that if Fetter found Bosk injured and decided he was going to repair him, let's say, like he did Fennec, and put a cybernetic stomach in Bosk, you can bet your bottom dollar there'd be some little remote in there that, if you don't do what I say, I'll press the button and blow your stomach up, or something like that. You know, we put a bomb in there, or we put some sort of remote thing that can control him. You know what I mean? Yeah. Whereas I don't think he would do that to Fennec. From the little I know of their relationship, that's not shouting out that that's their dynamic. No.
It's not the vibe that they've given off. Yeah, exactly. Do you think that at least the topic of Boba's sister is going to come up in conversation between the two, or do you think maybe this is, at least in this, potentially this story is not about that, just about maybe the focus on him doing whatever he's doing with Jabba's palace?
Well, this kind of ties in. What you say there is a really good point. we've just, for the time being, lost Rogue Squadron, right? And you've got to think that there's something else is going to fill the void of that slot in the cinematic calendar.
Yeah.
What it is, we don't know. But my point is, you would think that Star Wars has got so many rich storytelling opportunities that they're not going to struggle to find a film to fill that slot. And with this, you've got Bad Batch happening, you've got Book of Boba happening, but there's connections between the two with characters and themes and so on and so forth. Part of you would think, oh no, let's save that Omega thing for later. No, it's Star Wars. You don't have to save it for later. Do it now, whilst it's in people's minds. Bring up the Omega thing, bring a more mature Omega character into it, or at the very least have it mentioned, but it's got to be explained to more of a degree than just a passing casual comment, because casual readers won't understand, or casual viewers won't understand what that is if they don't watch Bad Batch. So you've got to investigate it to a certain degree, because by if they do a season two Book of Boba, the story's moved on to something else. Maybe him and Fennec are at odds with each other, or maybe all the other bounty hunters from Empire have come into it. I don't know. I mean, I'm hoping to see a lot of those anyway. There's lots of opportunities. I don't think they need to sit on storylines and save them for later. So I think, to your point, yeah, I think they should. And I'd like to think you will have some at least mention, if not further exploration of Omega, because next year, 2022, we're going to get season two of The Bad Batch.
Yeah, that's true.
So that's, you know, that's certainly going to get explored more. So maybe what something, I know they're 25 years apart, but maybe something that gets resolved or chronologically resolved in the Book of Boba Fett can then be played off on in The Bad Batch. So I don't think they need to sit on storylines and save them, because it's Star Wars, for goodness sake. If you can't come up with other plots that grab people's attention with that canvas and that sandbox, you're doing it wrong.
I'm Brian Herring, BB-8 puppeteer, and you're listening to Fanthatracks. That'll learn you.
So we don't normally do this, but we are now, because we're in our little Boba Chunk section of the show, going to do a listener's question. This is from a listener who has sent in questions before. This is Paul from Australia, and he's got a very pertinent and rather excellent question. Hi, guys. With the new series, The Book of Boba Fett, looming, I have a quick couple of questions. How do you think Temuera Morrison's portrayal of Boba will line up with Jeremy Bullock's? Jeremy's character was more the Clint Eastwood gunslinger, whereas Tem's comes across more warrior-like. Do you think this is something that will be explained or addressed in the series? Can't wait till 29th of December. I'm so excited for this show. Keep up the great work. Kindest regards, Paul from Australia. So great question, and thank you, Paul, as always, for listening and sending in your questions. I interviewed Jeremy years ago for Star Wars Insider, and the quote that always stuck in my head was how he said, I always played Boba as if it was, you know, the man with no name from The Good, the Bad and the Ugly. Understated, doesn't speak much, low-key, lethal, but not particularly verbose. You see Tem in the role, much more mask off, obviously. You're hearing him speak a lot more. There's obviously a change in the character. But what do you think? Do you think that Jeremy vibe will be accommodated? Or do you think this is a sea change in the character?
Oh, good. It's a good question, actually. It's a good point. Actually, one thing I've not even thought about, because I think I've just accepted it about Temuera's Boba. And at least from what we saw in season two of The Mandalorian, he's really channeling his kind of Maori warrior battle instincts, I think. But I mean, actually, it's funny because I had a conversation, I had a chat, I can't remember where it was, it might have been LFCC, with Jeremy Bullock. And I said to him, I'm building my own Empire Strikes Back Boba Fett costume. Can you give me any tips on how I should act in it? He was all very kind of like nice and said, have fun with it. But like you said, it's all about being a present and minimalistic moves. You know, everything that you do is kind of considered. So when you move your head, it's not like you're just looking. It's like you're looking for a reason. I mean, we're kind of in like that blank canvas perspective, really, because like Boba in Empire is, I think, the pinnacle of Boba Fett. But how Temuera like has his own take on how he should be, because I'm guessing Temuera's going to be like, well, I'm going to be channeling more of what Jango Fett did, and you know, maybe kind of trying to line it up that way. I mean, and I suppose it also comes down to their direction. I mean, I would like to think there will be some kind of nods here or there to previous Bobas. I mean, even that line of dialogue that you kind of get in, I think, one of the teaser trailers, where he's like, I am Boba Fett. To me, that just kind of screamed the animation from Holiday Special, which, of course, we know
yes.
Jon Favreau was, you know, is a big fan, and he's spoken at length about, like, that's not actually something that should be ignored and sniggered at. It should be kind of embraced. And so I kind of wonder, well, maybe if that is actually a little bit of a nod to that animation. So, yeah, I would probably think there'll have to be a middle ground, maybe. But I suppose, ultimately, Temuera is probably going to have his own take on stuff, which is, I think, what we've seen already. And so it'll be interesting to see how it plays out across like all seven episodes.
Like we said, you know, he's a proud member of that small team of performers and actors and stuntmen that have been in that armor, and there's not that many. So obviously that's a proud lineage there. But beyond that, to what a director would want, to what the writers require, and to what Tamura is able and allowed to do with the character. Yeah, he's got to make it his own. There's the pre-Sarlacc Boba Fett and there's the post-Sarlacc Boba Fett.
Yeah, exactly.
What happened to him in there, in the acid, whatever we get to see, if we ever see inside the Sarlacc physically, I don't know, because he comes out in one piece, essentially. You know, obviously he's mangled and scarred and the acid burned, as we know, the Sarlacc's belly's pretty much full of just that stuff. And it clearly ages him. You do see in one of the teasers him in what appears to be back to fluid. So, yeah, you know, that's him healing up. But I think he needs to kind of, and you're right, he is totally channeling the Maori warrior, which works really well. So more of that, please.
Yeah.
But I do think what Jeremy said to you, that Boba Fett, and this is what I think newer fans are a bit sniffy about Boba Fett. They're like, well, what's he ever done?
Yeah.
And us older fans are like, dude, he only ever had to be in the room. It's like when you're a kid and your dad gives you that look. Most of us will know, like, when your mom or dad gives you that look, it's like,
time to shut up.
And that was Boba Fett. That's Boba Fett in Star Wars. Like, he only ever has to be there. You're like, do I really want to test this? Because it might literally be the last thing I ever do. That was just the threat of him being there. It was just, you never had to lay a hand on you. You just didn't do it because the threat of it was worse than anything. Fett as a character now, he's had this change. He's physically changed. He's essentially older. He's a clone. So, you know, he's not exactly the same as everybody else anyway, because unaltered, genetically unaltered clone, but he's still a clone of Jango. So I think you're right, actually. The way you phrased it was quite cool. Chimura is more than likely going to channel Jango because he played him. Than anything else. And we are seeing a Fett that's more action orientated. Yeah. The focus is on Boba Fett now. He's not just a background character, which he, to a large degree, he was in the OT. He was more prominent than a lot of others, but essentially background character. Now all the focus is on Boba Fett. So now Tem can bring all of his skills and all of the angles that he wants to bring into it. The directors have other options as well. It's a recipe for some really cool stuff, I think.
For everything in one location. Daily news, reviews, interviews, podcasts, video and social media feeds. Bookmark FanthaTracks.com for Star Wars news 24/7, 365.
A couple of weeks ago, I was fortunate enough, along with Carl Bayliss from Desert Planet Discs, to travel to Telford for Wales Comic Con. Wales Comic Con in Telford, that makes no sense. But anyway, loads of Star Wars guests were there. Loads of Star Wars guests were there signing for people, meeting the fans, having a really good time. It was a great atmosphere and a good room. And one of those guests was Brian Herring. He's a friend of the site, he's a really good bloke, he's great fun, and he's appearing at Farthest From next weekend as we speak down in Forney Bridge. This is my brief little chat, myself and Carl, with Brian Herring, BB-8 in the Star Wars sequel trilogy.
So we're sitting in the food court at Wales Comic Con. I've just had a very nice pizza and I'm sitting next to Brian Herring. Brian, how's it going?
I'm very well, thank you. I hope you enjoyed your pizza. I made it specially.
Oh, thank you. It's very nice. It was very nice.
BB-8.
It did look a bit like BB-8. Good point. Back out at shows, doing events, yes, meeting people and greeting, shaking hands and kissing babies. How has it been for you?
It's lovely. I've forgotten how tiring they are, actually. I lost my voice yesterday. I woke up this morning and made this sort of strange squeaking noise, which, you know, you could say I make all the time anyway, but... I've forgotten how much it takes out of you. I've not done one since, well, February of last year. And they are kind of relentless. So, and also, I'm right next to some kind of dancing machine game thing. So I'm having to speak over the top of that. So I'm getting a bit hoarse at this point.
So, obviously, everybody knows you. I mean, you did, was it Farthest From for us last year online, Dave Tree's event? So we've been doing events from home and sitting in our living rooms and such, but what's it like being out and about again and, you know, seeing the world?
Oh, it's lovely. A lot of people probably know I used to go to conventions before I started attending conventions, so I've always enjoyed them. And it's just smashing when you see people, you know, cosplaying, and not just as Star Wars, as anything, you know. But there was a kid ran through today dressed as Indiana Jones, and he was being traced by a guy dressed as a boulder, which was the funniest thing I've seen in such a long time. And it's really great that, you know, I love conventions because people can express themselves like that. Yeah. And it's nice, you know, just meeting Star Wars fans again and just chatting away and them asking you questions. And every now and then you get kind of like questions you haven't answered before, and that's always great as well. But it's always fun to just sort of share the stories and just meet the people, because I'm fascinated how far people will come to meet people. Yeah. Not just from Star Wars, say from wherever, you know, they've got Lord of the Rings people here, Doctor Who people here, talks with people, and people just really get into it, and I like that kind of inclusive community, and it's very fun, it's huge amounts of fun.
because you've seen both sides of the table in that sense, you're a fan anyway, and then you enter this world of being on the other side of the table. Do you think that makes you appreciate it more, in a sense?
I think so. I think I know what's expected of me, or what I would expect from people, because now and then you see people at these shows who don't even look up, and I'm just not a big fan of that kind of behaviour, really. But so I know the sort of things that I would want to know about if I was asking about something that I wanted to know about. Yeah. So I try and tell people those kind of stories, and just the sort of stories that you won't necessarily have seen in a making of. You know, so it's just sort of more personal stuff. That's, you know, and how I felt about doing the job and the people I work with, and, you know, and the people that don't necessarily get the recognition in a lot of those documentaries, that the guys who work in the workshop and just make eyes, or they do kind of crazy stuff with feathers and that kind of thing. So I try to talk about that sort of stuff as well.
What's happening with you at the moment? We know you're working on Spitting Image, but any other irons in the fire?
I have just finished Spitting Image. I've got a couple of video game voices that are out and about in the world at the moment. And there's a video game that I can't talk about that's coming out next year. And other than that, I have nothing going on, and I'm going to sit down for a couple of weeks, and it's going to be really nice.
That's brilliant. Well, thanks for giving us your time. I know you've got to get back to your table, but it's always cool to see you.
Cheers. Thanks a lot, Mark. Cheers. All the best.
On the 9th of December, Thursday the 9th of December, Starburst magazine's back on shelves. I'm talking about it here because I write for the magazine, and I have for about 4 years, and I'm thrilled to bits. It's now a quarterly premium format magazine, $6.99 a quarter. It looks phenomenal. The guys have been working on it for quite a few months to get this ready for launch, or for relaunch, basically. Have you seen anything of Starburst in your travels around the galaxy over the years?
Oh, God, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that and SFX magazine, I used to buy kind of fairly regularly. And now that you're writing for it, I'm definitely going to have to avoid buying it. But no, it's one of those magazines. I did go through a stage from like about 97 through to, like, I don't know, about 2000 of like anything that had even the remotest hint of Star Wars on, I would pick up. And then just kind of looked at all these magazines, like, you know, all these random magazines of, like, you know, GQ and Vogue and just random kind of like weekly crappy 58p type magazines. I went, what am I doing? But the thing is, some of the articles in Starburst were gold dust, really, I suppose. You know, you yourself growing up in that original trilogy era, and the fact that they were writing about Star Wars and that right back in, I think, what, their first issue, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That's got to be kind of like invaluable, you know, articles and stuff to kind of, and probably interesting to kind of go back and revisit.
They were originally a Marvel UK title, then they went into private ownership, if you like, and they've moved around a few times. But the title has always been there with a few breaks. Obviously, we just had the COVID break, which nobody can help. They've been as they are for quite a few years now. And of course, you've got the website as well. It is officially the world's longest running magazine of fantasy film and television. But it also does a lot of horror. So if you see the cover to issue 476, which is the next issue that's out, it's all sort of classic horror characters on the cover. But they talk about anything and everything. Cover. It really is, isn't it? Very cool cover. It's going to catch people's attention. So it's back on shelves 9th of December. I can say I have two articles in it. I've done a interview with Drew Struzan, which you will find on Fanthatrax. The interview will arrive on Fanthatrax at midnight on the 9th of December, but also in print in Starburst magazine on that very same day. So you'll be able to read them in either place. And then ultimately that Drew interview will end up on Starburst website as well later, a few weeks later. But for the time being, you can read that on Fanthatrax. It's an exclusive to us. I've also written a piece about Multiverse of Madness, which when we wrote it was coming out in March, but of course Disney and Marvel in their ultimate wisdom have moved it back to May. So you can read all about the history of the multiverse and all that cool stuff that's coming with Marvel next year. But issue 476, Starburst, back on the shelves, 9th of December. Thrilled to bits, so I can't wait to see it.
Hi there, Jeremy from the Hollowbrick Archives here, bringing the latest LEGO Star Wars news to Fanthatrax. The big news of the last week was the release of the new Ultimate Collector Series 75313 AT-AT on November 26th, aka Black Friday. Its big reveal was marred when one member of the LEGO Ambassador Network shared review images early and they leaked out. The set went on sale first in New Zealand and Australia, and then Europe, followed by North America. Seven brand stores marked the European release, with a midnight event that had a certificate of authenticity signed by the set's designer. Also included in the set's release was the free 40483 Luke Skywalker's lightsaber, a roughly 80% scale prop replica of the lightsaber handle that Luke was given by Ben in A New Hope. Sales went well, and the LEGO online store only had to run an automatic queuing system for an hour after North American shoppers started hitting the site. The set took 24 hours to sell out its initial stocks down under and North America, and 4 days for European reserves to be diminished. The start of December saw the beginning of Advent, and fans around the world opened their LEGO Star Wars Advent calendars. Collectors, of course, relied on the internet to find out what each day's reveals were. The rest of the month, as we get closer to the arrival of the Winter Wave, has been filled up with new product reveals, including the 150th Brickhead, Ahsoka Tano, the new Razor Crest Microfighter, and the all-new accessory packs. You can get all the latest LEGO Star Wars news, reviews, and in-depth features from www.holobrickarchive.com.
As I mentioned earlier, we spoke to Brian Herring. On that same day, we went down the line of Star Wars guests, and you've heard some of it on previous shows already, but at the show was John Morton. He is also Dak Ralter from The Empire Strikes Back and Bespin Boba, as he will tell you himself in stings that we play on the show. So here's my chat with John Morton at Wales Comic Con.
It's Sunday morning. I'm stood next to John Morton, who I want to mention has got the most excellent ponytail. Tell me, before anything else, forget Star Wars, tell me about the ponytail.
It's my COVID cut. I just decided I wasn't going to see barbers and doctors and dentists, and so I just let it go. And I grew a beard, which was about as long as yours on all sides. And so until one of my cousins said I look like Grandpa Smurf, but none of the fans said that, but when my... And say, hey, no, I'm an old Jedi, retired in isolation, living monastically. Nobody bought that. So when Cousin Kay said, oh, John, you look like Grandpa Smurf, I thought, that's not very cool. So I cut it.
So how many events have you done now that we're back out in the world doing these things?
Well, it's been an extraordinary run. I was going out every weekend in July, so I've done... Pensacon, Pensacola, yeah. Huntington, West Virginia, Brownsville, Texas, Grand Rapids, Michigan, Rochester, Minnesota, San Jose, California, Dallas, Texas, AwesomeCon, Washington, Sheffield in September, which was the first time I came back over to the UK. Yeah. Well, that's sort of it. I'm sure I'm missing one or two, but...
That's a good run.
That's a great run, and I was going... Literally, I think I was out every weekend in July, which I've never done before.
No.
Usually I'm doing one or two a month. So, yeah, it's been real busy. The fans have been very appreciative that we're out here. Really, you know, I can't tell you how many times I and all of our colleagues were being told, oh, thank you. You know, for being out here.
And have you missed it? I mean, it's different now, but have you missed it?
Yes. I think, you know, the interaction with the fans, it's a mutual admiration society, particularly when you're working with people in the 501st or the Mandalorian Mercs or the Rebel Legion and all the wonderful work they do for Make-A-Wish and other organizations. We get a mutual charge from each other. That helps us go out and, you know, bring the Force to the world.
Yeah. Since all the world got turned upside down and shook around a little bit, the Mandalorian has come out, we've got a Boba Fett show coming out. Of course, that puts focus on your good self in that sense. Has that been exciting for you to see those progressions?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I, like so many people, feel that the Mandalorian has the spirit, infinitely so, of the original trilogy.
Yeah.
And I love the way that the CGI is being used there with the new technology. And I had a long chat with Jet Lucas about that, because that's the area that he's sort of working in. You know, I think the sets that they've had are really as exciting as the stuff that Ralph McQuarrie was doing. So particularly the one that really grabbed me was the episode where they kind of came into the Mon Calamari dockside and crashed into the water. The brilliance of using those, you know, images that they had, where the container cranes look like the AT-ATs. I mean, you know, the overlapping references, I guess you'd call them the Easter eggs, intentionally or otherwise. I mean, it was, you know, Chewie, we're home.
Yeah. I mean, as somebody who's been around movies for the amount of time that you have, you've seen the technological advancements. So to see something like that level must be fascinating to you.
Very fascinating. And I think as somebody who worked in Empire Strikes Back with, in that case, blue screen, the advance on the blue screen, green screen technology with what they've got now, where they can recreate a set on, you know, on a computer.
Yeah.
And so the actors can walk into a black box, as it were, and from their perspective and the perspective of the cameras, see the whole thing rather than having to imagine it and then have it move in such a way. That's a very effective marriage of technology and traditional acting and what have you, so that, you know, you're not having to imagine in your head talking to a character or in a space, you know, with pure animatronics. You're able to get one step beyond back to being in the setting.
You've got a queue building up, so I don't want to keep you too long because there's money on the table there, but I do have one question for you, and you might be well placed to answer it. Obviously, when George was making the films, the technology was what the technology was. Do you think the films would have been markedly different if he'd have had this modern technology, in the sense that it's so much more easy to manipulate now? Like at a stagecraft stage, you can change the backgrounds. There's alterations you can make. Or do you think it worked better the way that it was?
I'm going to answer that differently because, for example, Robert Watts is just down the road there. When I was doing Empire Strikes Back, so many of the people that I worked with, British, Ed Elstree, doing props, effects, and what have you, had worked with Stanley Kubrick in 2001. And what I feel is it's the personal relationships in the network that's involved in putting these things together that extend not only amongst the crew, but kind of bridge over into the relationships with the actors, that you've got that collective force that realizes a vision. And George was able to tap into that, right? That's tremendously important, regardless of the technology or the technological advances. Along that point, I'm strongly a person who believes that guys like Brian Herring are the Jim Hensons of today. And so the folks that are in the creature effects department, at least in this sort of genre, guys like Paul Casey, Derek Arnold, and others who I've met, Lee Towersley. You know, those folks have those relationships where I can see that after I fall off the perch, they're going to be around in 20 years' time, and people will be referring to them and the impact that they have on filmmaking the same way as we talk about Jim Henson.
Thank you for your time, as always. It's always a pleasure. You've got your cue, so I'm going to let you get back to your cue.
All right, may the force be with you.
And you.
Now we're going to touch on a topic I never thought we would talk about on the Making Tracks or Fanta Tracks, but the Spice Girls, yes, the Spice Girls, are celebrating 25 years of success since Wannabe came out in the summer of 96. They sold millions of albums, they sold millions of singles, they've had numerous number one hits. And they had a film out, and I think it was about 1998, called Spice World.
That's right.
But anyway, there's talk of a biopic, or a biopic, of the Spice Girls, and Mel C has mentioned the name of somebody who might just be perfect to play Sporty Spice in a Spice Girls biopic. She mentions the name Daisy Ridley. Now, she doesn't say that she thinks Daisy should play her. She said somebody had said that Daisy Ridley would be good to play me in a biopic. And I think now it's out there in the world, and the thought is in your head, and you look at Daisy Ridley and you look at Sporty Spice. We've talked about Daisy's accent on the show, haven't we?
Yes.
About how she doesn't have the best American accent. Could she do a Scouse accent?
To be fair, that's one of the prerequisites, isn't it? They've kind of got very similar kind of look about them. But I would be fascinated to see Daisy Ridley as Mel C. But I'd be more curious to find out who you'd cast for the other members of the Spice Girls, specifically anybody from Star Wars.
Okay, all right, okay. Well, let's start from the top.
Go on.
We'll see what each of us thinks then. Ginger Spice. I think Ginger Spice, it's got to be Donal Gleeson. Donal Gleeson is Ginger Spice. Okay. Makes all the sense in the world to me.
I'm going
to
go with Rosario Dawson for Mel B, for Scary Spice.
See, I would have picked the Rancor, but Rosario Dawson as Scary Spice would be actually quite cool. That's a good one. I would have also gone for Erin Kellerman from Solo.
Oh, yeah.
That would have been, she would have been a good Ginger or Sporty Spice. She's a twofer.
Yeah.
She could have done either.
That's a good shout.
Yeah.
Well, Baby Spice. Okay, you mentioned Rancor, so surely it can only be Baby Yoda.
I would have either gone for the Baby Rancor from that episode of Bad Batch, or Omega would have been a good Baby Spice. What? But Baby Yoda, definitely, that's the ultimate number one pick.
Yeah, I feel almost like this kind of conversation, we're kind of slightly treading on the toes of our good mate Claire Henry and Planet Leia talking about Spice Girls and stuff on a podcast. I'm going to spin on its head then. Who would you like to see from the Spice Girls in a Star Wars film, and what character?
We'll also think about that. Planet Leia episode 6 is out on the 10th of December, Friday the 10th of December. I'd put Scary Spice, Mel B, as Mara Jade, because we need a feisty, sort of full-on Mara Jade. If they're going to bring Mara in,
but Mara Jade's ginger.
That don't matter. Okay. That don't matter. Right. We can ginger Scary Spice, can't we?
Yeah.
I think she'd have the right attitude and such for that. So that could be interesting. And Baby Spice, she would play Baby Yoda.
Good shout. That works for me.
There's one Spice Girl we haven't mentioned. Posh Spice.
Of course, yes. Posh Spice, yeah. Well, Daisy Ridley could play Posh Spice.
Mon Mothma would be a good Posh Spice.
Yeah, a young Mon Mothma. I was going to say, like, maybe Padme. Posh Spice is always about the high couture and the fashion and stuff. And let's be fair, you know, Padme hasn't offered anything to the Star Wars universe except for a load of, like, glamorous dresses and stuff. I joke before somebody goes, what about Luke and Leia?
Good grief. I'm so glad you qualified that statement. I really am. So we've got Padme for Posh Spice. Now, who would Posh Spice play in Star Wars?
Oh, I'd say some kind of like highly strung Imperial officer, maybe like Admiral Pirt or something like that.
I could see Posh Spice as Princess Leia. You know, the haughty A New Hope Princess Leia when she was quite nose up in the air, the young senator.
That would do it. Good shout on that one. Definitely.
And who would Jerry Halliwell play? Ginger Spice. Who would Ginger Spice play in Star Wars?
Something a bit random, like maybe, I don't know, Admiral Holdo.
Oh, Holdo would be good. I mean, ginger hair, purple hair. I mean, you're not a million miles away.
Yeah, exactly.
She could do it.
Yeah.
Girl power. I mean, the Holdo manoeuvre, it needed that extra oomph, wouldn't it? A bit of girl power would do it.
Exactly. That's exactly what it was. All about girl power.
Absolutely. And the final one before we roll out of this episode and completely kill our career, who would Mel C play in Star Wars?
Well, Mel C was always kind of my favourite. I think she can play Rey.
I mean, it kind of makes sense.
Exactly.
I could see Sporty Spice playing Rey. I think that'd be pretty cool, actually. All those kung fu kicks. That'd be great.
Exactly.
We've just made a new franchise.
Exactly. We've just done a reboot, I think.
We've just done a reboot and we're not going to top that. So I think we should roll out of this episode.
I was going to say, I think on that note, or should I say bombshell, it's probably time to wrap this one up. If any of our listeners have actually got any Spice Girls Star Wars casting suggestions, we'd love to hear them. But of course, I suppose, Mark, you better let the good listeners know how they can do that.
That sounds like a plan. If you want to be a part of the action and stay updated on all the latest Star Wars news, visit FanthaTracks.com or check out the free FanthaTracks app through the App Store to follow us on your mobile device. Hallelujah. You can reach out to us and send in your listeners' questions by emailing radio@FanthaTracks.com. Keep sending the questions in. Thank you again, Paul, for today's question. Keep sending them in. We want new ones. Comment, like, and share on any of our social media feeds at FanthaTracks. And be sure to subscribe, leave a review, preferably a 5-star one, on Amazon Music, Audible, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or your podcatcher or smart speaker of choice. And as always, thanks to James Semple for composing the FanthaTracks intro, Adam O'Brien for our Making Tracks opening music, and Mark Daniel and Vanessa Marshall for our voiceovers. Remember, tune in to FanthaTracks' new show, Good Morning Tatooine, live Sunday evenings, 9 o'clock UK, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific, on Facebook and YouTube. And that's me done for this episode.
Off you go, then. Bugger off.
I'm off. I'm gone. You're wrapping the show up on your own.
As I always do. So, yeah, Mark, thank you very much for joining me. And, of course, everybody else, thank you for listening. Do appreciate it. We do this for the love of Star Wars and for the love of you guys, so we don't ask for anything back in return. No Patreon subscriptions. Nothing. You know, it's our gift to you. So all I can say is, for now, thank you very much. Take care. And may the Force be with you.
Coming up next on FanthaTracks Radio, it's Planet Leia.